After experiencing the transformative power of a regular meditation practice, it's natural to feel inspired to share this gift and guide others on their own journey of discovery through meditation. Join Buddhist teacher David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell, comedian and creator of the Netflix animated series The Midnight Gospel, for a free online event on Tuesday, May 7th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. They'll discuss the profound practices of mindfulness in Dharma Moon's renowned mindfulness meditation teacher training program. Get certified by Dharma Moon to teach meditation, lead group practice sessions, and work with individual students. Visit dharmamoon.com/beherenow for more info and to reserve your spot for the free online event with David Nichtern and Duncan Trussell.
Welcome to the Metta Hour with Sharon Salzberg, where Buddhist wisdom meets everyday life. This podcast is brought to you by the Be Here Now Network and features interviews with the top leaders, teachers, and thinkers of the mindfulness movement and beyond. For more information, visit BeHereNowNetwork.com/Sharon.
Hi, I'm Sharon Salzberg, and I'm speaking today with Joelle L. Daniels. Joelle, also known as Joelle Leon, is a performer, author, and storyteller who writes and tells stories for Black people. Born and raised in the Bronx, Joelle specializes in moderating and leading conversations surrounding race, masculinity, mental health, creativity, and the performing arts, with love at the center of his work and purpose. He's a Creative Collective New York City Creative Class alumni, winner of the BCA Bronx Recognizes Its Own Award in Poetry, an author of Book About Things I Will Tell My Daughter, and God Wears Do-Rags Too. His TED Talk on Healthy Co-Parenting has been viewed over 1.5 million times. Joelle has worked with the Gates Foundation, HBO, Nike, Twitter, and The Today Show, and has been featured in Ebony, The Independent, Newsweek, Medium, BBC News, SiriusXM, Forbes, The Huffington Post, Blavity, and others. His most recent project is a spoken word album, Soundtrack to a Riot, which was released in August of 2021. Welcome back to the Metta Hour, Joelle.
I feel like I said this before. I need to cut this bio because I don't like you having to read all of that stuff. That is a lot of things.
That's good.
That's a lot of things to read. I don't want you going through.
Well, there's
going to
be more and more as we get on in years, you know?
You know, just I'm just going to have to reshuffle. Cut. Just cut some things now, you know? But it is my absolute pleasure, Sharon. My absolute pleasure and joy to be sharing space with you again. So,
Hello. So let's start with what I spoke about last, which was the spoken word project, Soundtrack to a Riot. So can you tell us about what inspired you to do it and what it's about?
You know, I was in a space artistically, I think, and maybe energy and heart wise, where I was finally, I think, open to explore. I think a lot of the times when I'd been making music or making art, whether it'd been a book or just writing a poem or writing a rap, whatever, it always been with like a kind of formulaic set way in, like, okay, I'm gonna get some beats for some producers and I'm gonna have a title and a concept for the album and then there's gonna be like a process. And this did not follow that at all. It was not streamlined in the least. It was very much sporadic. You know, I had some friends in the recording academy who were asking spoken word artists to create more spoken word albums, honestly, to bulk up the category and to make sure that the category of spoken word at the Grammys had its own category. Because right now, spoken word is shared with audiobooks. So like Obama and the poet Jay Ivey can both be up for a Grammy in the spoken word category. Wow. And if you're a spoken word artist, that doesn't really make any sense. Right. So like wanting to create separate distinctions for both categories, and part of that being there needs to be more spoken word albums. And so that was our call to action. And I was like, this doesn't really follow my formula. Do I want to do this? And then I was like, why not? Like, you know, we don't have a recording space in the apartment. And for those listening, like, I currently live in Brooklyn, Bed-Stuy. But I think part of it is me knowing that I have like room to like do things in this space. And so I had a little equipment. I had my phone because, you know, you can like record things on your phone now that like sound like they have quality. And so over the course of four nights, you know, I took some pieces that I had written and I said, OK, let me just play with these and record it and make a thing out of it. And I did. And it was such a joyous, beautiful experience to be able to do that and not have to. I think the way that we function now as artists has shifted so much where, you know, honestly, you know, before you and I hopped on, Sharon, I was talking to Lily and it was like things are so different because before we would just go to a studio to record this conversation.
Right.
But, you know, technology has afforded us the opportunity to not have to do that if things are preventing us from doing so. And so it was nice to be able to record in the privacy and comfort of my home and do it on my own without needing to rely on other people in order to make my art, which is my favorite way to make art, you know. And so the project in and of itself is really me exploring what a riot gets to sound like from the Black male perspective, from the Bronx born perspective, from the perspective of a pandemic. You know, I think it allowed me to look at many different facets of the energy that was showing up in the past 2.5 years, really, for me specifically, and hoping that was able to translate to other people as well. You know, it was and I hadn't recorded in about five to seven years. So it was nice to be able to get back into that space.
Wow. I mean, something about that kind of inspiration where you just you're moved to do it. And you don't quite know even what's going to happen to it, you know?
But yes. Yeah.
You're moved to do it. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it was, and I think, like you said, like being moved to do it and not necessarily having to be, I've spent a decent amount of my time as an artist, if I'm being honest, being trying to be intentional, but also strategic. Like if I drop this around this time and this feels timely, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, not kind of throwing all that to the wind. And just going, okay, this is what I want to do. And let me just do it and see what happens. You know, that was fun.
Yeah, it's fantastic, you know, because it's, I mean, the industry is an industry, you know, and it's always that boundary of art and commerce. And or it's doing it a whole other way, which is kind of intriguing. I mean, years and years ago, Joseph Goldstein and I did what we call the correspondence course. With his company Sounds True, and came about totally accidentally. It was 12 talks, and it was on cassette tapes. It was that long ago. So one side of the cassette had a talk by one of us, and the other side of the same cassette had a guided meditation by the other one of us. And, you know, so I made this arrangement with Tammy Simon when I was in Boulder, and came back and told Joseph, we're recording a correspondence course. And then, you know, I just was trying to figure out, like, what topic should we include in this and that. And I said something to Tammy, like, well, there could be 15 talks. And then she said, no, there have to be 12. And I said, why 12? And she said, because that's how many cassettes the case fits. And I thought, really? We're designing this whole curriculum around, you know, the plastic case, you know?
Yeah,
I guess that's, we are, because it fits 12, you know? That's what we did.
Yeah. And it's like so much of how I think the industry like has been set up. It is, it's a formula, right? There's like a certain way to do things. And I think the way, and you know, I think what's inspired me about you, what's inspired me about the work that you do, and I think what's inspired me about the work that our community has been doing, especially when we talk about mindfulness, it's really been about not necessarily following the formula at all. It's like the formula is like being, kind of, if even that is a formula, you know? And so what feels right in this moment? And I could have not done the project you know, there was something in me that was like, I don't know, because it's not the formula. It's like, mm-hmm. I don't have all these things that normally I would have in order to move forward or make me feel mm-hmm. confident enough to move forward. And it was like, does it matter? You know, like I not for nothing. I think a lot of what I've been talking about and talking in conversation with folks and community with folks has been about like our impending mortality. Yeah. You know, like we're leaving, you know, and so whether that's tomorrow or 10 years from now or 80 years from now. And so I just want to do things. I want to experience things without the need to have it fit into a box, mm-hmm. You know, and I think, you know, whether it's a box of 17 tracks or like 12 cassette packets, you know, it's like wanting to like not be in the box anymore. I think, yeah. You know,
that's so great. I was talking to Parker Palmer, who's his friend and educator, and we were doing this webinar together, and he just had a birthday. He turned 84, I think, 83 or 84. And he said that he was brought in to a meeting with Andrew Young, and who was like 92 or something like that, and had been mm-hmm. very close to Martin Luther King Jr. And he said they were supposed to bring in like a younger person to have a conversation with him, but they brought in me. So no, he's like a barely younger, but anyway.
No, still.
He said he was very surprised to hear from Andrew Young that they were all obviously, you know, really young at the time of the civil rights movement, and that when Martin Luther King would talk to them, he talked to them so often about death mm-hmm. and reflecting on your own death and, you know, and the power of that and it bringing that sense of, you know, courage and presence. And it was just kind of a surprise, you know, like,
yeah,
to hear, because we're, you know, often so reticent to like bring it up.
mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 I wonder too, like when I think about like even like age, right?
Yeah.
Like I'm gonna be 40 next year, which and don't yell at me for this, Sharon, but like I start to feel like, oh, I'm feeling like I'm getting old and I'm not. I know I'm getting old. I know I'm a baby, and like by numerically, right, I'm getting older. Like there's like a thing that's happening.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I think also, I mean, maybe this kind of brings you, Sharon, that kind of brings to mind for me a question. It's like, what did it feel like, if you can recall, like what did it feel like for you to be 40 in comparison mm-hmm. to now with like how you show up in the world? Like did things shift willfully for you? Did you have to shift things? Like what was that experience like for you, out of curiosity?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a lot of different things because, you know, I did so many significant things very young. Like I went to India when I was 18 years old.
Yeah.
I'd gone to college when I was 16. I went to India when I was 18. And in India, you know, all those many years ago, I met like Joseph and, you know, people that I'm still very, very close to. And so I was always like the baby because I was like really young, and they were maybe 7 years older than I or 8 years older than I, but I was always the youngest. And then all of a sudden I was like not that young anymore, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was very interesting, and now of course I see even more change because it's true, just what people say. It's like I'm writing a book right now, and you know, I'm saying things that are said in a certain way. And I think, oh, maybe I should soften that. And I think, no, I don't care. You know, like, that's the way I want to say it.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that.
It definitely gets better. But it's also weird, you know, like I don't feel my actual age. And so,
yeah.
If somebody said to me, oh, you're this age, you're 69, I would think, I'm not. I am.
Yeah. I get that. I mean, because I feel that way now. Like, I don't, whatever 39 or like pushing 40 feels like, I don't feel it. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's something, and I think that speaks to, I feel like energy is a word that gets used so often now, mm-hmm, especially mm-hmm. by like millennials and geriatric millennials, like such as myself and Gen Zers. Mm-hmm. It's like energy. And it's like, mm-hmm. but it's true. There's an energy that you bring forward that I think, it's youthful because it's open and it's expansive. Mm-hmm. And I think when folks are moving in that way, it just really does get to feel and be, it lives outside of like age parameters, mm-hmm. I think, which is why I think too, also like when I think about our connection, like this exists outside of that. You know, I think there are more like logistical things that you can speak to that I wasn't present for that I would have to, like, you know, like that would require like deeper introspection on my part, you know, but the energy is the same. So it doesn't, it translates, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great. So let's look at our times, you know, we're recording in March. I don't know exactly when this will be on the air. And I know you're such a big proponent of mental health, and these past few years have been such a tough time for so many people.
Yeah.
With COVID and everything going on. So how are you feeling about life these days?
You know, I think you and I talk about this, and I don't know if I've said it as clearly, but, you know, I've been trying to make as much room as possible for multiple things to be true. Mm-hmm. Like the duality. And really more so, like, there's more than just two things happening at once at times. And I feel like I've just been really blessed, you know, and blessed not in like a religious, holy way, but just been really grateful for the life that I'm leading right now. Mm-hmm. And you know, the community that I have, because I think a word that's been coming up for me a lot, and I don't know if it's been coming up for you, but 2022 has really been about community for mm-hmm. me. It's been about communion, right? Mm-hmm. It's these things that just have brightened my world in so many ways. And so, like, even sitting with you and having conversations with you, it's like, I always look forward to these. And I think this work has... The work that I've been doing now, I think, for myself, and not like work, my 9-to-5 work, but like mm-hmm. spirit work of like sitting more with things, trying to be more present, and trying to be and be more activated in certain ways. I think there's been like a calling together that I've mm-hmm. been very much responsive to. And like this is something, again, Lily and I were talking about before we jumped on. It's like, mm-hmm. we need each other, you know, Sharon, like and physically, like there's something to be said for being able to hug people and sit across from a person. And so this year has just been, I've been feeling really, just really humbled and honored for the opportunity to show up to do the work. Cause I think, there had been a couple of years ago, I was doing the work, but I was tired because there was so much work that I had yet to do on self that I wasn't as aware of. I think, you know, I was digging through a depression that I wasn't even aware was a depression that I was sitting with in. You know, it was the pandemic. It was postpartum because of the birth of my toddler. You know, my eldest Lila, she had left the city and then moved to Houston with her mother in 2020. And so all those things were like the perfect storm. And then I was just working. I was just consistently working. And, you know, there were so many opportunities that came up because I think when folks such as yourself and I think myself, when we're present and we're being mindful, when things are happening in the world and in communities, people reach out because they don't have, they're looking for like a roadmap. And they think for some reason we have it. And so where it's like helping folks walk through through whatever pastures they're trying to figure out, because they feel like there's answers that we have answered for ourselves. And mm-hmm. I had, and I haven't, you know, I haven't figured shit out. I'm walking, you know, and I think I'm walking better now, maybe, or mm-hmm. differently. I don't even know better is the right word, but I feel like I'm walking differently, a little more relaxed in mm-hmm. in 2022 than I was, than I have ever, honestly.
Well, you know, I think what really people get is just a sense of connection. It's not even the words or even from Twitter or, you know, where is where I met you, but there's something about the way you say things or the presence that you put into the tweet or, you know, the care. It's like, I think that's what people really get. It's like in my early teaching career, which is 10,000 years ago, because I'm that old, you know, and I was totally, totally unable to give talks because I couldn't do public speaking because I was terrified. And I was totally terrified. My big fear was that I was going to be giving a talk and my mind was going to go totally blank and I was just going to be sitting there like a fool, you know, like, I don't know what to say now. You know, and it's interesting because I talked to Pema Chodron once and I told her that and she said, oh, all these years I've been afraid that I'd be speaking about one topic and my mind would leap to a whole other topic and suddenly I'd be talking about that. And she said, in all these years, no one's ever complained. You know? And I think, yeah, you know, because there's something, you know, the funniest part when it happens sometimes is like somebody will say to me, it meant so much when you said like ABC. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting there thinking, I don't say ABC. It's not a thing I say, you know, but somehow you heard what you needed to hear. Yeah. And I'm so grateful, you know.
I've never said ABC. You know, like, it's not language that comes out of my mouth. That's so, but I love you saying that because I think I want to get to that place because when people, sometimes a person will tell me that and I'll be like, did I say that? I guess I did.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe I didn't. Maybe, thank you for that. Maybe it's just, it's the translation. You know, I think, you, like there are ways that you show up in the world that for me, like I've been talking about empathy and compassion.
Yeah.
Everywhere I go, I'm like, you know, Sharon Salzberg wrote this really amazing book. And in it, she has this conversation and she talks about empathy and compassion and essentially the difference between the two. And that was life changing for me because I think for me, it made me really look at where am I activated? You know, and like, how can, and activate it in a way that's like intentional and kind, but then also mindful and not like, not overstepping my privilege. Cause I think that can be a thing mm-hmm. too, where it's mm-hmm. like, oh, I have a platform now. I have a mm-hmm. voice. It can be easy. You can easily fall victim to this idea of like, I know, mm-hmm. you know? But like the empathy and compassion things, it's, I don't know how to explain it. It shifted things for me, but I could be getting it wrong. Like, I can't remember what exactly was said in the book, but I got from it what I needed to get it, you know?
Right.
Yeah. And I think I heard somebody else say this recently and like, we're translators, like you translate things for people, you know, like we are translators, like we are. And it's really just now that I'm leaning into this language. So thank you for that, for saying that. Like today, even I was thinking like how there's like another level or layer of like translation that I want to get to. And I don't know what that is yet. And some of that might be like, do I, you know, is it me being really, really intentional about speaking in like African American vernacular? And I was like, maybe, but I don't want to, that's not it. It's like, I want to make sure that it's really clear, but it's also clear in my language. And I think even just thinking about that is going to create room for it. But yeah, like I love how you said that. Like it's translating. We're just translating things for people, I think.
I think it's true. And so much of it has to do with the heart. Honestly, I really do believe that. It's the connection because people will hear different things. And it's not that you don't have anything specific to offer because of course you do. You know, we all do. But, you know, I think mostly what people really do get is the sense of, like I was teaching here also a million years ago, and I was asleep. It was before we had a house, so I was sleeping in the center. And in my sleep, I had a dream, and in the dream, someone asked me, why do we love people? And in the dream, I responded by saying, because they see us. And then I woke up and I thought that was really good.
That was really good.
That was really good. That was good, you know? And I think that's, you know, even, and what amazes me is that it works even when we're not physically present. Someone can feel seen, they can feel validated in what they're feeling. They realize you're not freaked out about what they're feeling. They don't have to be so freaked out about what they're feeling.
Yeah, yeah. You don't have to be so freaked out. I was having a conversation with my coworkers earlier, and we were talking about going back into the office. Yeah. And, you know, it was nice. And literally, I had just had a conversation with my partner, like maybe an hour or so, about like, oh, you know, we're going to be going back in the office. And I'm kind of anxious, you know, and it's like, I haven't been in the office since I haven't been in an office for almost 2 years. I've met a couple of my coworkers, but not in the office. It's like it's an office setting. Like, I'm fine commuting. Like, I've been taking the train here and there. Like, I've been meeting people. So, like, going outside is not the thing that's like, oh, but it's going into a working environment with my colleagues and getting to know and understand behaviors and, like, you know, who goes where for coffee, learning. I've never been in the New York Times building before. So, I have to get familiar with that. And that's a whole new process that I have to kind of configure to. And everyone said the same thing. It was like everybody else was like, oh yeah, I didn't say that to them, but one of my coworkers was on the call and she was in the office today. Mm-hmm. And she was anxious going in. And it was like, oh, that made me feel better because it was somebody else reflecting an experience that I felt was solely an experience I was having, which is seldom, if never, the case.
Yeah.
You know? Right. Yeah. And so it's like, oh, we're mirroring. This is cool. You know?
Yeah. Oh, it's a lot of dislocation. It's like, wow. You know, I think I know several people who work in some business in New York City where the business expanded just before the pandemic. Like they didn't have enough rooms, so they rented a whole other floor or something like that, you know.
And then
just been like empty for 2 years, you know. It's just like it's all so weird.
Yeah, it is. It is.
You know, and people are hurting, which is also, you know, really sad. And as is so often the case, people can commonly blame themselves for what they're feeling instead of thinking, "This is a pretty awful circumstance for a long time, you know." Like I survived. Yeah. Like that's good.
Yeah. And I tweeted something. I tweeted something recently, and I was just like, and I was just talking about my work as an artist. But the thought that came to mind when I was typing was like, you know, the circumstances that create the work do not either devalue or like add merit to the work. It's about the work, you know, and it's easy to look at, you know, it's what am I not, like, I'm not doing this, I'm not doing that, I'm not doing whatever. And like, we can be cognizant and aware of the circumstances, but the circumstances don't take away or add to, like, I think the presence and the intentionality behind the work, you know? And so it's easy to say, well, and granted, we can also on that, like, adverse to that, you can go, oh, I did this, this, and this during a pandemic. Look at me, right? But it's also like it's so much is shifting because of the pandemic and because of the world we're living in. And you know, when you know, it's what, this March 2022, and we're talking about like a potential world war. Like I think we moved past this already, right? But it's the circumstances, right? All these things, this upheaval, this chaos that is happening. And it's easy to forget that that's happening. Like, it's a thing that is happening amidst you having to pay bills or go grocery shopping or take care of your family or write a book. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, with 10,000 more words, you okay. know, that need to be added. You know, not to be, not to remind you.
Thank you.
I love you too, Sharon. It's like, you know, it's like there's so many things happening. So how are we showing up for the things that are happening and giving us, like, grace is another word that's been coming up a lot mm-hmm. for me too. Mm-hmm. Like how much grace are you giving yourself? Okay, cool. Can you give yourself a little more? Because I'm pretty sure what you're giving yourself right now is like grade. It's not grade A level grace. You're giving yourself mm-hmm. like the bare minimum of grace because of whatever. But we're not considering all the other things that are affecting the work potentially, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm.
You know, I meant it about I survived because I have a friend who, he wrote about this. So I'm not like... I always get nervous when they say I have a friend too, and people are going to think, "Boy, you can't tell her anything; she'll tell the world." You know, so I want to say I don't repeat stories that they don't tell themselves. You know,
FYI,
sometimes very publicly, but or else I change it so that you could never ever guess who I'm talking about.
Yeah,
fair. So I have a friend who survived a terrible accident, and in the process of trying to save his wife, which he did.
Oh my God.
He ended up throwing her in a way that she got an injury. Mm. And and then they were in my life before, you know, and then mm-hmm. so I was just in touch and they ended up seeing this trauma therapist who was fabulous and saved them in so many ways, from just the emotional burden of so much that had happened and, like long hospitalizations and all these things. And so at one point he said the therapist had given him almost like a mantra, gave him this saying, you know, mm-hmm. which was, "I survived." And I said, "You didn't realize you survived, you know, like, yeah. shouldn't that have been yeah. obvious?" And but he actually was really torn up with guilt about having hurt his wife,
yeah,
which was so irrational.
Hmm.
But it's just what our minds do sometimes. And so, you know, sometimes it was very impactful for him to actually repeat to himself, "I survived. Like, I'm here. I'm okay."
I think, too, there's something to be said for the speaking of a thing. I think I think we can either give power or take power away. But, when I was able to put language to my depression, it didn't say it magically cured my depression. That's not it. But once I finally had language to it and I could speak truth to what I was enduring, it allowed for me to engage with it in a way that wasn't not dishonest, because it wasn't like I was saying I'm not depressed. But I think, actually, no, I take that back. I definitely at one point said I'm not depressed. But saying it out loud gave me a sense of liberation that I hadn't felt, because it was like, oh, I can put a name to this thing. I have language for it now. Because I knew I was going through and processing high functioning depression, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew I could, I was excelling at work, you know, and when I was called for an IG live or a panel, I was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But I can look back now and I can see the level of ease that I have now. And that's because of the lack of barriers that I had. Like, my heart wasn't closed, but there were a lot of things that were keeping me from feeling the totality and fullness of the work that I was doing because of so many of the circumstantial things that were affecting it, like a pandemic and, you know, like having a child in a pandemic and not being away from my other child in a pandemic. And, you know, the state of the world, like all these things that we are feeling. And, you know, I do. And also, too, I don't think this is getting off track, but like when we talk about being empathetic, and I feel like you might have written about this in some way, but like, and people being empaths, and it's this notion, I think, sometimes of like consistently and constantly falling on a sword. Like, I feel everything. And it's like, yeah, you feel everything, but you don't have to become everything that you're feeling, mm-hmm, you know? Mm-hmm, and there's like work, there's more work involved with that, but you could get to be an empath without having to feel, without having to take on the pressures and weight of the world as like almost like a empathetic martyr, yeah, you know? Right. And I feel like I was doing that to a certain extent at some point, not like necessarily saying, oh, I feel everything and this is why, but I could see how I was letting things get to me in simply as I can put it, you know?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Well, I think it has, you know, it's hard to put it in words, but it has something to do with space, you know, like it's one thing if something enters us so deeply and it inhabits us and we're kind of caught in it, and there's almost no separation between the rest of our being or our awareness and and the thing, you know? Whereas it's different when there's just some greater amount of space. Same thing, maybe, you know, same memory or distressing image or feeling or something like that. But it's different. It's a little bit like, you know, from what I understand about some trauma reflections, you know, if something happened when you were 2 years old and you adapted some strategy in order to survive, that was probably very smart, you know, like maybe you left your body or, you know, whatever you did, it was very smart at the time. And now you're, you know, 50 years old and you're doing the same thing. You know, to realize deeply, you know, like I'm an adult, actually. I'm not 2 years old. I'm not vulnerable that way.
Yeah.
You know, this is not a question of survival. Actually, my awareness is bigger than the fear that is coming up or the sensations that are coming up in my body. And that's a genuine, it's not trying to avoid the pain or anything, but it's a genuine realization like, oh, it's different now, you know. And I can have some perspective. I can have some space, and it's all about space, because you're not also saying, hopefully, I shouldn't feel this, and this is, you know, for cowards or whatever, but feel what we feel, you know?
We feel what we feel. And, like, even, like, you mentioned space, and, you know, it makes me even think about physical space, you know, around the same time that I was able to say, oh, you know what, I'm depressed. I have this language for it now. We had just moved into a bigger apartment in Bed-Stuy. And I think from like, we went from like our smaller one bedroom to more bedrooms, essentially. And being able to do that, I think also afforded us space, you know? So like when I need time, I can go into this office room and just like, I can close the doors and I can read, or if there's ever time to read, but there's space to do things, and there's also space in spirit. But I think those things coincided with each other. And it also makes me think about, again, the privilege of that, you know, even granted, not necessarily correlated, but when I think about the story you shared about the husband and wife and like, you know, reconciling the privilege and sometimes how that privilege can be harmful. And so part of that work, I think part of the work for me and what I think for all of us is not just being cognizant of the privilege and of like, okay, well, I survived this thing, you know, which is a beautiful statement to make. But I think also too, and also in conjunction with like the empathy and compassion conversation, which I've translated into like compassion is empathy in action, right?
Yeah.
Like if I've survived, what do I do with that? You know, like, and for me, my survival has now been, how do I use it as a testimony for others to not give them a roadmap, but to essentially translate for folks what that looked like for me, because it might look similar for you and the path is going to be different. But here's some things that I learned and gleaned along the way that I hope could be of assistance to you. Like, how am I using my survival as a mechanism for change and compassion and also for like growth for others, you know?
No, I think it's really crucial, because I was talking to somebody earlier today and who maybe was closer to my age than your age. I'm teasing you. But we're talking about like my parents' generation. And, you know, people like my father went off and fought in World War II. And she was working with a lot of people who I suspect were children of Holocaust survivors, you know?
Yeah.
And so it was like the trauma of a generation. And the people like my father, who came back from the war, didn't come back and say, either I survived or this is what it was like. They just drank, you know, and they never said a word about it.
Yeah,
ever. You know, with a lot of really terrible, terrible consequences. And but it was so many, I know so many people's fathers who were like that, yeah. You know, from that time. And you know, to give voice and to sort of be a part of a larger cultural voice that acknowledges, yes. This can be really hard, or we can get depressed, or, you know, depression is a complicated thing. Maybe you look at five different things that are feeding into it, you know, that are something like that. It's really important because without that external, I think, kind of cultural buy-in, then we're really adrift, you know?
Yes. And that's the, you know, and that's the thing I've struggled with a little. It's like not when I look at the state of like just if we look just looking at America, right? Mm-hmm. There are always going to be people who are not aligned, you know, and who don't get it, who don't have access to the language, who don't have tools, mm-hmm. you know, and wanting so much for everybody, but knowing like, you know, we all have free will. Yeah. And so what, I don't want to say I'm asking for your advice here, but it's something I struggle with a lot. It's this notion that, cause like, don't want to be fatalistic, right? Because, mm-hmm. you know, I think about Ta-Nehisi Coates and like mm-hmm. how he's kind of made mm-hmm. a shift where at one point he was like, racism is never going to end. Mm-hmm. He was like, I just don't see it. And I'm trying to not be in that space because he's also shifted to like, mm-hmm. I don't think racism is going to end in my lifetime, which mm-hmm. I know for certain is not going to happen in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. But it might happen in my children's lifetime, maybe, mm-hmm. you know, but then when I think about climate change and like so much, and when I think about, I saw a tweet recently. And they were talking about the pandemic. And I bring this up because in the tweet, the person mentioned World War II. And like, what are like the ration books that people had, right?
Yeah.
I can't, it's hard for me to imagine that happening today.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be a negative Nancy in this way, but like recognizing that we've been slowly shifting into this version of ourselves that is focused on what I need in survival. It's survival. Like I personally, ego self needs to survive. Mm-hmm. And that survival is not contingent on how other people are showing up in the world.
Yeah.
And like how making room for that dissonance, like knowing that cultural shifts need to happen and they are happening. Like we can look now, like to your point, you know, the fact that I get to have conversations with my daughter about her body.
Mm-hmm.
That wouldn't have happened in, that wasn't happening as often as it is now, mm-hmm. you know? And so that gives me hope, but then it's also like is that short-sighted? How have you been able to do this work that you do so well, while in remaining and remaining as like steadfast in this work? Well, I mean, while looking around and seeing like things turning to shit, it's like,
well, they're bad. They are bad.
You know, like that balancing act that I feel like that I know that you're continuing to do, but how do you continue to do it? I guess is probably the question I'm trying to ask you.
Yeah, I mean, the work is, you know, I kind of not marred or compromised, you know, by, first of all, not everybody uses it, so you can't really say the tool is not working because mm-hmm. who knows, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And and it's not an instantaneous tool, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, or a set mm-hmm. of tools, things are slow, and yet maybe very steady. I do feel, I mean, it's scary sometimes, you know, just to sense this much hatred in the mm-hmm. air. But it's also, you know, partly this is now I'm feeling really like a mature person. I don't know if this is my opinion, you know? Partly it is being older, as terrible as things have been and can be, and can be into the future. There's something about knowledge and openness that is different. It's just different. And you know, I'm trying to think, how old was I when I came to understand that someone could be a homosexual, as we would say. And it was not young, you know, like it was just like, it's all hidden. It's all quiet. It's all. And I think I contrast that to, say, my goddaughter, who's in her early 20s, who just like, it's inconceivable that she wouldn't have known that from the time she was four. You know?
I love that, because I think it's easy for us to limit how expansive our hearts can be. You know, and it's also easy to forget. It was what I try to remind. I use language like context and nuance a lot, because I think it's so easy to forget the context in which things are happening. Like you said it yourself when you were talking about, like, we're in a pandemic. It's like, it's easy to forget that the context of these things matter. So, you know, an example, I was a part of this really great cast of Black folks who were talking about Black masculinity. And Justice, who was sitting next to me, Justice, who identifies as they, them. My mom watched this, right? It was like an ABC News Live special. She got to watch it on Hulu. It was really cool. Like, my mom got to see me like on TV. And, you know, we had a conversation a couple of days after, and we were talking, and she was like, Justice, he's like, you know, my mom was West Indian. Justice is like, he's a gay, right? She's like, I'm like, yes, mom, Justice identifies as queer, he identifies as they, them. And she was like, they, them, you know, and I just want people to do what they want to do.
Oh, cool, mom.
You know, but my mom is like, but it was, she was like, she was saying how interesting it was, because I think, and what I think about is the context. Like, my mom came to the States when she was, what, 20, 21? My mom is 75 now. See, the conversations that were happening around the queer community and homosexuality were different for folks who weren't in the community. And I think that, too, is just such a big part of this. Like, when we talk about intersectionality, all this language that I learned, Sharon, I learned from social media. I learned from, like, you know, and part of that is, like, there was language that was very much a part of certain circles of communication. So if you went to a university and maybe you were a part of the African American Studies program, or your parents were, or you had friends or cousins who were, you were probably being put on to certain kinds of books, certain kinds of literature. If you had friends who were in the queer community, like, the first time I had a queer friend was in high school, you know, and, like, the idea that, and I went to a performing arts high school, and so the context matters there, because we had a community of folks who were more open and who were, and you had folks who were more supportive of that openness. You know, like, all these things matter, but the more we create space for that, the more we create space for ourselves to like examine other things too, right? Like, well, how do I identify? Am I attached to this identity? What does this identity even mean? Like, these, again, are conversations that I wasn't even a part of. I went, like, 10 years ago. You know, it's so, like, even holding space with you, like, you've been doing this work. But for me, this is new. Like, we're talking about nine years, roughly, honestly, maybe more so. But this is new work for me, and I'm still learning the language. But there's so many folks, to your point, who don't have the tools. So we're judging people based on, and, like, we assume people have the tools because we think we all have the same access. You know, but we don't. You know?
I have a colleague who used to, when we were teaching together, she used to say quite a lot, everyone's just doing the best that they can. And I would sit there and think, I don't know about that. You know, I mean, I'm a New Yorker first and foremost. You know?
Like, thank you.
I don't know.
Probably not.
And then I read this great quote from Maya Angelou, who said it, you know, better than I'm about to say it, but something like when we know better, we do better. And then I could hear that more than everyone's doing the best that they can, although they mean the same thing.
I get it.
You know, because if we knew more, if we saw more clearly, if we had a better sense of connection, you know, with how things are, we would do better. And we don't right now.
Yeah, I tell that to my daughter now. I tell that to Lila. Like, when you know better, she goes, do better. And she only says it when she's like, I'm caught her doing something. You know? And I feel like I feel like a TV dad when I do that. It's like I have a thing now that she has to repeat, which is nice. It makes me feel homely. But
I have some of your tweets in front of me. So I wanted to read some because they're so fun. And some of them can ask your permission later, you know, to put in my book. And inspiration. Not having all the answers right now is perfectly fine. Though this road may feel like a path once traveled, no two steps are the same. Holding on to a fixed view of the when or the how serves you no good. Having it all figured out is not the way in. Honoring your journey is. Well, that's pretty cool.
That does sound pretty cool. Now I hear it out loud. Cool. That does sound pretty cool. You know, we say in advertising, WIP, right? A lot, like work in progress. And I think we are, right? Like I think we are all works in progress. Mm-hmm. I know for myself especially. And so I think for me that tweet was really about reminding myself, like, it is. It's about the in-between. It's all about this in-between of, like, and, like, getting there, I don't even know what there is, you know, and I'm trying to let go more and more of what there is, you know, because, like, there's always going to be a new there, I think, if we're looking at goal-oriented versions of, like, a journey as opposed to just walking. Like, my favorite kind of walking is the walking that my dad used to do, I think, before he passed away, which is like just not walking to a destination per se, but just walking because it feels good to use my body in that way. And so I think that's what I imagine, what I would like to imagine journeying is for me, but then also what I hope journeying can be for everybody. To just like go, you know, because like we spend so much time, I think, trying to steer, you know, and power steer, right? Like, oh, I got to go left. Oh, I gotta go to the store, or I gotta go to, I don't know, sleep, or I gotta go, as opposed to just like, I'm here, and like, what does my body need? And what do I need, you know, in this moment, you know, and just journeying with that in mind, I think.
It's so beautiful. And here's one I know is destined, hopefully, for my book. It's on awe, because I recognize it. We put so much pressure on ourselves to make something extraordinary out of this existence of ours, when in reality, our breath, the mere presence of our flesh, our feet touching ground, and our hands reaching for a forever burning sun is as extraordinary as we need to be.
I have, that almost made me cry. That sounds really silly because I wrote it. So that makes me feel weird about it. But I remember writing that, and I don't know. Like, I mean, Sharon, even being able to hold, like, okay, now this might make me cry, but like, you know, I don't know how much time we have here, you know? And I think for me, it's like, even you reading that reminds me to be grounded in like the moment of, oh, I'm getting to talk to Sharon right now. You know, like your book is on, like your book is in my bookshelf right behind me where I'm recording. And you know, I think about the fact that, like, I'm blinking right now, right? You can't see me, but I'm blinking. Mm-hmm. And while I'm blinking, thoughts are coming, right? Like, there's words coming out of my mouth that I'm not thinking about, but I am thinking about. Like, that's wild to me. Like, that we get to do this. Like, I can look out this window and, like, the wind is blowing. But there's, like, a thing that's happening in order to make the wind happen and the trees are moving. And like that to me is miraculous. Like that's magical, you know, it's how do we make, and like, it's impossible to be in that space all the time. But if we can just get to a point where we can remind ourselves of these things, that every interaction, every time we engage with the person, whether it's buying our coffee or calling a bill, like getting a call from a bill collector that we don't want to get, or because that happened to me today.
Oh, dear.
I think it was a spam call, though. Pretty sure. I'm like, I don't owe y'all money. You lying. Or like, I don't know, waiting for the bus or picking my daughter up from school or like all these things that I think can tend to feel trivial are not going to feel trivial when we don't know how much time we have left, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, mm-hmm. And because of that, it's like, I want to keep reminding folks. And I think repetition gets to be a big part of that. Like, sometimes I have to say, we say things over and over again. And it's easy for me, especially in the social media world, to feel like, oh, I've said this already. But mm-hmm. not everyone gets the tool at the same time. Right. And so, but I need the tool first anyway. So I'm going to keep saying the same things over mm-hmm, and over mm-hmm. until it feels like a muscle work for me.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. But yeah, it's just wanting to remind people to just like, this is, we are living, walking, breathing miracles. I don't have to think about breathing. That is a really big deal because mm-hmm. there are people who have machines for that. You know, it's like, this is, There's, I don't know. This is so much magic in that to me.
Well, I think we do need to hear things over and over again, at least like Asian monastic pedagogy is entirely about repetition.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you just hear it again and again and again and again. Well, you know, you listen to those talks, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, can we talk about something else? You know? But, you know, it's a very Western thing in a way about novelty, you know, and it all has to be new or it's not fresh. And it's interesting when you're in a different environment, you know, and it's again and the same thing. But each time you realize, oh, I heard a little something I hadn't heard before.
There's like, a little something. It's new. It's different. And we get to visit those places over and over again. And like, I think for a little bit, I was not judging myself, but again, overthinking the mm-hmm. process as opposed to just being here for the process, you know?
You wrote something on pride, which I also have a section on pride or self-respect.
Mm-hmm.
The world is changing and so are you, but the core of you, the spirit in you remains. Honor that, cherish that.
I think that goes back to what we were just talking about this, right? The circumstances and the circumstantial things that can, like there's certain things that like, okay, I don't know. Last week we were just eating a lot of Mexican food, just mm-hmm. were. This is like, I don't know, for whatever reason. It's not a core value. It's not a core tenet of mine. It's a thing. It's a, like, if we want to throw that in a group of behavior, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's a, like, we are eating out regularly, whatever. Mm-hmm. But the value system doesn't shift based on these other things that are affecting why we were eating Mexican food. That's probably a horrible example. But the idea that how we show up in the world doesn't have to be a reflection of the world. I mean, it's mm-hmm. very like biblical in that way, you know, right?
Mm-hmm.
That this notion of not like you're a part of the world, but you don't have to become the world that you're a part of. And so I think it's easy to point fingers or to point blame or to judge and go, oh, this because this thing is happening, I now must do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we can respond to the thing that is maybe triggering us or bringing a response out of us, but it doesn't mean we have to shift who we are intrinsically because of that. You know,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think it's like, because if I have a core set of like, this is what speaks to me, this is what means the most to me, it's a lot easier for me to say yes and no to things mm-hmm. and to people that aren't in alignment with that and mm-hmm, not feel guilty mm-hmm. about it either, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay, and love. Energy check. How are you feeling today? How are you breathing today? How are you loving today? How are you sitting right now? How are you being right now? Clear space. Make room. Dig deeper. You're so good.
I mean,
basically writing my book. You know?
No, I think, I mean, part of it is because I'm so inspired. I mean, reading, it's funny because when you're reading it out loud, I'm inspired by you. I'm inspired by folks like you. And I mean that truly, Sharon. Like there's, You know, like there's a way that I speak, right? That's different than the way you speak. Mm-hmm. That's different than the way mm-hmm. my partner speaks, whatever. But I think so much of that is, even while you reading that out loud made me check my posture. And it's like, okay, yeah. I wrote that because I knew in that moment I had to check myself. And I'm like, okay, I can't remember why, but like I probably was feeling tight about something. And because of the practice, I was able to come back to something, mm-hmm. right? That was like, okay, like a foundation. And once you have a tool, right? If I know I need a screwdriver, I know where to find it in the apartment, right? That's like right. I have tools. And so like the work that you've done and continue to do just gives me more tools in my toolbox. And so when I'm doing that, it's like, oh, if I have the tools, I'd be remiss not to share those tools with other people. Mm-hmm. And so when in those moments that I'm afforded and I can like come back to something, I'm like, if I'm coming back to this, somebody else probably needs to come back to this too. Cause mm-hmm. if I'm feeling tight, somebody on this platform of a billion people is probably feeling tight. So hopefully this will give them the room to like check in with themselves. Like, oh, there's a pandemic going on. Oh, maybe you're having an argument with your spouse. Oh, maybe you didn't get the raise that you wanted or whatever. Or like you and your child are having a disagreement or whatever. Someone, you just lost somebody. Mm-hmm. Like, let's check in with each other. Cause I think the more we check in with each other, going back to space, right? The more space we create for each other in the process.
That's beautiful. So what's next for you? Do you have projects? Do you have, you're going to start performing live again, perhaps, right?
Perhaps, hopefully. I think, you know, there might be a performance at Wild Birds, which is this venue in Brooklyn, outdoor performance over the summer, mm-hmm. which would be great. You know, and I already told you, we'd love to have you. I'll keep you posted. You know, my book proposal is out the door. Literally shine like about two weeks ago. The working title right now is What Kind of Black Are You? And it's really just like an essay collection. Some new essays, some older essays with a lot more meat to them, which I'm really excited about. Uh-huh. Like tapping into some old stuff was like some new thinking. But really just looking at the world through the lens of pop culture and blackness, and specifically through like the cis hetero black mm-hmm. masculine mm-hmm. perspective. Like how that's colored my world and for lack of a better term. And trying to bring some more vulnerability into these spaces that I'm writing about. So I'm talking about my body, talking about race, I'm talking about rap music, I'm talking about making adult friends. Like there's a lot of things that I'm trying to like touch on that I think uh-huh. were uncomfortable for me to write about, which means I probably should be writing more about them. You're right.
I wrote about that too. Like I have a little section on, you're the first person I've talked to publicly about this book, actually. I have a little section on creativity and I talked about when I was working on faith, which was like more than 20 years ago. And that was when I started spending time. I grew up in New York, but it was when I was working on faith that a friend of mine offered me her apartment that she was leaving for a few months to be there and write, you know, so that that's when I sort of came back to New York as an adult. And she was an editor, actually. And she had this big sign over her computer, which said something like, tell the story that scares you. And I kept looking at it thinking, I don't want to. No thanks. I don't really want to do that.
Okay. I don't really want to do that. Yeah, no, yeah. That's where the healing is. That's where the love is. Yeah. Like, I had my first ketamine psychotherapy experience a couple of weeks ago, actually. Yeah, about 4 weeks. And literally, like, I've never taken psychedelics before. Mm-hmm. And I've been very much interested and invested in the process. And it was the most amazing experience I ever
had. That's so great.
Like, by far. And, you know, like literally an out-of-body experience. Mm-hmm. And I think I bring this up because I think that at one point I was underwater and I was following this dragon-type entity. And the dragon was like, come on. And there was like some brief hesitation because I was also a dragon, like, but almost like a voyeur. It was like a VR experience for me. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I followed the dragon and it was just amazing. We were just going through water and whatever. And like I keep coming back to that moment because what I heard in that moment was surrender.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, like letting go. And like the come on was a call to action for me to go, just go. Like you don't have to, and if it's scary, because like it was scary. It's like I'm a dragon, what the fuck? And I'm following this dragon. Like I'm underwater, Sharon, like what's going on?
Yeah.
And but for me, it was like, oh, let go. Like, what else are you, what are you afraid of? And just go. And so mm-hmm. I think that's for me, like the process of writing even just the proposal,
yeah.
you know, for me was like looking at some of these essays. Like I talk about my father and Black mortality. Yeah. There's like
yeah.
stuff in there. So like that's the thing that's coming up, I think, that I'm really excited for. And just more community. Like I told myself at the end of 2021, and like you're a part of this. Like I said, I want to make beautiful art with beautiful people. That's all I want to do. And to be able to have that as kind of like, not my New Year's resolution, but it was like, okay, this is what's going to be my North Star for this year. Yeah. And maybe just moving forward, because mm-hmm. it feels so loose to me. It's like, I don't know what that art looks like and I don't even care anymore. I just want to make it. Mm-hmm. And I want to make it with my community and do it for as long as I humanly possibly can. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the thing I'm looking forward to, I think, more than anything. It's just like making things with people, you know?
Well, may it be so. And many blessings upon you, really.
Thank you.
Before we end the conversation today, is there anything else? Do you want to lead us in some kind of reflection or meditation?
I want to lead in a reflection. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, I talked about this earlier with you, but, you know, and not being morbid in this way, but, you know, like we have so much time to experience people and things and places. And we don't have a timetable for that, right? There's no mm-hmm. map or calculator we can use to say, oh, okay, I will be here up until, and I don't think we would want that. But with that, for me, the call to action for myself, and I think for us as a community that is very much interconnected because we are all connected to each other, mm-hmm. right? Like I was listening to something Tara Brach was sharing mm-hmm. earlier today about interbeing and the idea that mm-hmm. like no one thing, like everything affects us. Like mm-hmm. the kindergarten teacher, which is true. Like my kindergarten teacher, like I remember Miss Chow, you know, like everything affects everything. And so with that and with us being interconnected beings, this notion that this is all the time that we have in this vessel, like whether you believe in reincarnation, whether you believe in a heaven, whatever you are praying to, this notion that there might be a hereafter. Cool. Great. Got it. But for right now in this vessel, this shell of human flesh that I have, that my spirit is living in and contained in, like I want to experience the fullness and totality of life and living. And that doesn't mean you go climb Mount Everest. If you want to do that, cool. Great. More power mm-hmm. to you. That is not what I'm going to do. But like, you know, I want to encourage people to fall in love, to say yes to the job, to mm-hmm. move to the place, right? That you've been wanting to move to, because you can't get it back. Like you can't make new memories in that way. Once this time is gone, you can't mend the relationship. You can't end the relationship. You can't mm-hmm. do all those things after. So like, you know, don't wait, like, okay. you know, and if you wait a week, that's fine. If it's a really hard decision, mm-hmm. by all means do it. But like what I've been trying to encourage folks to do more of is like, just do the thing, like paint the thing, sell the thing, join the dance group that you've been afraid to join, or like mm-hmm. call the person that you're mad at, and, you know, or don't. But like mm-hmm. make a decision and be active and be proactively loving and intentional about it. But do it, because this is it.
Wow, it's fabulous.
Yeah.
Here we are.
Here we are, Sharon. Here we are. Here we are.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today. And to learn more about Joel's work, you can find him on social media like Twitter, where I follow him obsessively. and get yourself a copy of his new spoken word album, Soundtrack to a Riot, available on Spotify and other streaming services. Thank you to all of our supporters out there. Thank you for listening. This has been the Meta Hour podcast from the Be Here Now Network. May you be safe, be happy, be healthy. May you live with ease.
Welcome to the Metta Hour with Sharon Salzberg, where Buddhist wisdom meets everyday life. This podcast is brought to you by the Be Here Now Network and features interviews with the top leaders, teachers, and thinkers of the mindfulness movement and beyond. For more information, visit BeHereNowNetwork.com/Sharon.